welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Delighted to have you here and to be back with you. I took a couple of weeks off. I wrote a column about the possibility of the power grid failing, a hurricane or something hitting the Washington area. Scared me so much that I left town, and then, of course, it did happen. So I'm this new self-styled weather Nostradamus for a while. I've got a really good show for you today. Stephen Losey, senior writer with the Federal Times, is going to be with me, and we're going to talk about a variety of things that have happened over the last couple of weeks. It was a major legislative advance on June 29th. And Steve, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you?
Hey,
Mike?
thank you for coming in and bringing us up to speed. As you were saying, this retirement, this phased-in retirement, is a big deal.
That's right. It is. It's one of the biggest changes to how federal employees and their employing agencies prepare for retirements in years. Not to be hyperbolic, but it's a major change to the kind of which we haven't seen in a while. This is something that the administration has been pushing for the last couple of months. They proposed it in the February budget. OPM Director John Berry said it was the most significant personnel reform proposed in the budget. And basically, this is going to allow federal employees at the end of their career to kind of ease into retirement. The way it works now is if you're of retirement age, you can either, you know, stay on longer or you can just enter into retirement fully. There's no middle ground. The problem is there's a lot of people out there who aren't really ready to hang up their spurs. They want to, you know, they might want to have a little more time to work around the house or, you know, do a little golfing, but they've still got something to give to the federal government, and they want to work and maybe mentor some younger employees, maybe wrap up some bigger projects that have been on their plate for a while. So this is going to give them an opportunity to do that.
Well, I remember in your story in the Federal Times, you talked to a number of federal workers about it, and one of them said, realistically, I can't play golf 7 days a week or something to that effect.
That's right. That's right. And there is an awful lot of interest. I put out a call on our blog to ask if people were interested in this, and I think I've gotten probably, I don't know, dozens of emails. I only quoted a fraction of the people contacting me, but there is an awful lot of interest out there in this option.
Well, I know that you could see John Berry's fine hand in this, and when he talks about it being a major advance. This is something that people have talked about for years, and at one point 4 or 5 years ago, I thought it was almost at hand, then it sort of went away. But I guess with the government drawdown and the buyouts and the way different agencies are reshaping it, it probably couldn't come at a better time.
Yeah, that's right. And this is something that was also discussed last year by the so-called super committee that was trying to find deficit reduction. They said that they recommended the government enact phased retirement to cut down on the amount of reemployed annuitants that the government employs. You know, a couple of years ago, OPM, the government granted some looser restrictions on rehiring retirees and paying them both their full salary and their full pension. They would bring in retirees when they needed their experience, which is very expensive. You know, you're paying, you know, people twice, basically. It's called the dual compensation waiver. This would allow the government to hold on to that experience, but at a fraction of the cost, really.
And I believe your story said that one of the requirements of this is that the person, the phased retiree, if you will, has to spend at least 20% of his or her time, mentoring other people or training their replacement?
That's right. You know, there's brain drain is a big concern of the federal government, and it's a major thing that is driving this new new retirement option. And you know, there's a lot of federal employees who are eligible to retire, and the government is scared stiff that when they all leave, they're going to take a lot of their institutional knowledge with them. By spelling out in law that you got to spend 20% of your time mentoring, at least 20% mentoring younger people, you are they're making an investment and making it a lot more certain that the knowledge that they've accumulated over decades won't leave with them when they walk out that door.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up that this was an idea from the super committee, because I suspect a lot of ideas from the super committee and from other presidential commissions and whatnot are going to crop up, if not this year, maybe next year when they start, quote, reforming the government. Going to be a variety of changes that are proposed. One thing that I think sometimes it's interesting to go into the history of these things, you mentioned the Dual Compensation Act. The reason for that was way back in the day, the then government account, the General Accounting Office, as it was known in those days, the Government Accountability Office, now did a study, and they found that there was a widespread abuse of a lot of people were high-ranking military officers were retiring and then being rehired in the Defense Department or in other jobs. So the idea was they were getting both their retired pay and their active duty civilian pay. So they promulgated the Dual Compensation Act, which put limits on the amount that could be earned, and time limits. You know, you had to be out of government for a certain period of time. And then last year, I believe, as you said, they changed it so that people could come back into the government. And this was largely something that grew out of 9/11, when you had experts in CIA and money laundering and various intelligence and language skills, people who had retired, and the government wanted them back. But even at that time, there was a fear that this could become, to develop a sort of a buddy system where, you know, old Hank would retire, and then 3 days later he'd be rehired by another agency or maybe even his own agency. So this has this is looking at that issue, too.
Yeah, exactly. So the way this would work is your pension would be reduced proportionally by the amount of time that you retire. So if you say work half time, you'd get half your salary and you'd earn half your pension. And you know, it can vary. You can work one day a week, 2 days a week, 4 days a week, whatever. But it always is proportional to the amount of time you work. And they would calculate your pension at the time that you enter into semi-retirement, but there's a few caveats. It wouldn't include credit for your unused sick leave, this partial pension, and it also wouldn't include a FERS Social Security supplement. Now, that's an important thing for people to consider when they're thinking about, is this right for me? Anyway, you'd work a couple of months, a year, maybe a handful of years. The Congressional Budget Office estimated people would work about 3 years in semi-retirement. And then when you decide, okay, I've given everything I can, it's time for me to enjoy my golden years, and they enter into full retirement, then they do another calculation. They calculate a partial pension based on your phased retirement period, and then they add it to your original pension that you got, the full pension, at the time of semi-retirement. So anyway, it's a bit of a complicated process. You're going to need to sit down and kind of do the math, maybe talk to your HR person, and decide if this is right for you.
So if I did this and I went into partial retirement, would I wind up making more money, both in combined salary and annuity, than I would without doing this?
Are you talking about?
Would the total amount that I had at the end of the day from my retirement and from my government work, would it be more than I was making if I had not done this?
No. Okay. It wouldn't be more. And you know, when I've done the calculations, I did I calculated several people's phased pension and their full retirement annuity. You know, assuming that someone would have worked the whole time, because your high three may take a slight hit, your pension after phased retirement may be a little less, just a little less than what you would have earned if you had worked those extra years.
Okay, Steve, let me hold that thought of you. We need to take a short break here on your turn. Be right back talking about the new phased retirement.
Read on the problem. Like now, when I'm on the airplane and somebody has a Kindle, they either have to turn on the light because a Kindle doesn't have any light built into it, or they also have these little small lights that clamp onto the side of the Kindle that lights it up because the Kindle is not a backlit screen. On the other hand, when I go to the swimming pool and there's bright sunlight, I cannot use the iPad.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Today, federal agencies are awash in a sea of data. You have two choices, drift along or harness it. Turn to Deloitte. We help defense and civilian agencies reveal insights buried deep in their data and make sense of the what-ifs and what's coming, so you can reduce costs and improve outcomes or do things differently. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. We help government help America.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
Here's Captain Michael Weiner, Chief Medical Information Officer of the MHS on the Federal Executive Forum on Healthcare IT, sponsored by Quest Software.
Our current electronic health records are tucked behind probably the most secure network on the planet. Users take it for granted that our data is secure. Working with ONC and now working with our commercial partners, it's those touch points that we have to ensure that there's a secure movement of data from our network to the outside networks.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to Federal News Radio.
Quest Software IT Management Solutions help you lower costs, manage risk, extend platform capability and lifecycle, and reduce the complexity of IT management. They make your mission possible, physical, virtual, and in the cloud. Quest Software is simplicity at work, and it's available through DLT Solutions. Simplify. Thrive. Quest Software. Learn more at DLT.com/mission possible. That's DLT.com/mission possible.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other health care needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during the big summer sale, now through July 21st. You'll save 30% on their popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit them at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch their top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 AM.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for July is Chime. Remember when bands and choruses were the pride of their schools in our city? Well, now they're almost gone, victims of budget cuts and test prep. But you can help Chime bring back instrumental and choral opportunities. Over 25,000 students have been reached, but no small nonprofit can fill the need alone. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey talking with Stephen Losey. He is a senior writer with Federal Times, and he's written the premier piece, I guess, on this new phased retirement plan that Congress approved. Steve, you were saying that people who go into this, who maybe take phased retirement, work part-time for the government and are retired part-time, well, their eventual annuity will be slightly less than it would have been had they stayed on the job?
Yes, because if you're working part-time, then your annual salary isn't increasing your high three.
Right, the high three is not as high as it would have been.
It's not a big hit, but
yeah,
it's slight. So you should go into this go into this with open eyes.
Well, you know, I know in your piece you said that this is really only for people who are otherwise ready, willing, and able to retire. And I was thinking about the old banking adage that if you desperately need a loan of a large sum of money, you probably shouldn't get it. You know,
yeah.
And this is the kind of thing that if all systems are go for somebody, I assume, then this could be manna from heaven. But if you're just trying to get out of a bad job situation or you need some time to repair your roof, maybe not the best reasons.
Probably not. Yeah, I think you should. Yeah, you know, I was talking with Dave Snell at NARF,
right,
about this. You're very familiar with
sure.
Dave. Talked to him many times. His take on it was federal employees tend to be rather conservative, especially when it comes to something as important as their retirements. So I doubt there will be many people who say, well, I don't have, you know, my TSP isn't where I'd like it to be, but gosh, I'd really like to take 2 days a week and work on that reshingling that roof or something. I don't think that's going to happen. I think federal employees are very smart about how they make their retirement plans. I think they're going to think about this long and hard. Certainly the emails I've gotten indicates that there's a lot of people who are thinking about this long and hard. So yeah, I think that's what is going to be the thought process in many Fed's minds.
I think he's right on there because, as you and I know, in the private sector, half the companies don't have a retirement plan, period. So there's nothing for people to fixate on. Of those that do, many are dropping them or cutting them back. But the federal government is really the last bastion of what you'd think of as a good old-fashioned corporate-style retirement plan, and therefore people are very well aware of it.
That's right. That's right. Now, I should say that there is one caveat. This isn't going to be an option for everybody.
Yes.
It's going to be available for all agencies to choose to use, but it's going to be up to agencies and the managers of the agencies to decide if they're going to offer phased retirement to a certain person. You can't just walk into your boss's office and say, you know what, boss, I'm going to work, you know, 2 days a week, and you're going to like it. The manager can say, no, that's ridiculous. I can't do that. So at that point, your only option.
You can work no days a week.
Exactly. You can either retire
yeah.
or you can suck it up and work full time. The other caveat, the law excludes several law enforcement officers like Customs and Border Protection officers, Capitol Police, Supreme Court police officers, firefighters, nuclear materials couriers, and air traffic controllers. They would not be eligible for phased retirement because they face a mandatory retirement age. So that's unfortunate for those employees, but that's how Congress wrote the law.
Would that be all law enforcement, the LEOs, 1811s, or just that group you mentioned?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
I know the law is clear that CBP and Capitol Police and Supreme Court are excluded. I'm a little unclear about the others.
Yeah, you got FBI and Secret Service. And when you mentioned that there'd be no FERS supplement, that you're talking about there'd be no FERS supplement while the person was in phased retirement, correct?
That's right.
But then it would kick in when they went to full retirement if they were still eligible?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what does a FERS supplement run now? What's that worth?
You know, it really varies person to person. Many federal employees, it's going to be several hundred dollars a month. For others, it's going to top $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
So it's not chump change by any stretch of the imagination.
All right, good. Well, I was going to ask you the who question, and you've answered that. It will be up to agencies to decide how to do it. And that's really important because when buyouts first came to be, a lot of people walked into the office and said, okay, I'll take that $25,000 check. And the boss said, no, you won't. They didn't understand that. And then there have been some other things. Teleworking comes to mind. Teleworking is the law of the land. It's been around forever. And some agencies like Patent and Trademark Office are heavily into it. Others don't do it any or very much. And, again, that's a management prerogative, isn't it?
That's right. We just had a new report on teleworking trends in the federal government that came out last Friday that shows There's been some significant progress in teleworking in the federal government since 2009. As of September 2011, this report said there were nearly 170,000 feds teleworking, which is almost a 50% increase over the number of teleworkers reported in 2009. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is only 1 in 4 eligible federal employees are teleworking. And, you know, more than half of those teleworking aren't teleworking very often, 2 days a week, 1 day a week, or occasionally. So the government is really trying to work on teleworking since they passed that Telework Enhancement Act back in 2010. They are making progress, but it's still somewhat spotty.
Well, I would think, too, and again, this comes down to the individual agency, its job, how it views its mission, whether the boss likes to have eyeballs on people or feels he can trust them away, or that they are at least as productive, if not more so. But I know at one point there were agencies that were cooking the books. At least we heard this from employees. And Congress said, you have to make a report to us, thinking that would solve everything. So what they do is have you, Steve Losey, telework 1 day a year, and me maybe 2 days a year. And then they could report that, yes, Losey and Causey are teleworkers.
Ta-da!
You have to watch how this is done. Steve, I've got a couple of questions from people here about this thing, if I may. One is... Okay, this is from Linda, an IRS employee in Montana, and she says, how does a phased retirement affect the high three? Does that compute as if you're working full-time, or is it the amount you actually earn or the amount of time you took to phase in retirement?
Your high three would probably not budge beyond what it was at the time you entered into phased retirement. Now, you would get... pay raises through step increases when, you know, Congress sees fit to start giving federal employees the regular annual pay raise, you would still get those.
Sure.
But because you would be working, say, half-time, for example, your pay in any given year would not be greater than your previous year's pay. So your high three would most likely stay about frozen where it was when you entered into phased retirement.
Right. I mean, that really shouldn't be at the top of your list of things to look at about taking phased retirement, I gather. Here's one from Mike S. Says, do you have to work at least 1 day a week? For example, can you take 6 months off and work 6 months?
You would have to work at least 1 day a week. You can't retire entirely.
I mean, that's really phasing it. Say, I'll be gone for 6 months and then I'll be back, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see. Here's a good one from Brad, and he says, retirement eligible, I've got a lot of things to do. Says here, what about continued contributions to the thrift savings plan? What about health and life insurance premiums? How will they be paid, assuming that annual leave and sick leave earnings will be reduced according to the numbers of hours worked?
Take those one at a time.
Okay.
Yes, you would still be able to contribute to TSP, your health and life insurance premiums, that wouldn't really change, I believe. I think that would stay largely unchanged.
Yeah, and as to how they were paid, whether it was salary or annuity, it really wouldn't much matter, would it?
Yeah.
Same premium. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Six of one, half dozen of another.
Yeah, and it says, assuming that annual and sick leave earnings will be reduced according to the number of hours worked.
Yeah, Brad is correct. You would still earn annual and sick leave, but only as much as you work.
Prorated. Okay. All right. Let's see here. This is pretty complicated. It's about taking care of their elderly mother. But a question on buyouts from Keith, and he wants to know, how come the IRS is offering buyouts, as we've all noted, at a time when they're having to hire new people under the Affordable Health Care Act? And my answer to him, and feel free to jump in, was that the buyouts have been made more a more surgical tool in recent years, certainly since the Clinton era, when they were sort of government-wide. But the buyouts now it seems to me, are being applied surgically. So they may offer buyouts in one part of, say, the Pentagon, the Defense Department, while they're hiring in the other, in another quarter. Is that your take?
I think you're exactly right. I think the way buyouts have sometimes been used in the past, and not to point fingers at any particular agency or administration, but sometimes buyouts in the past were used with a kind of the Meade Act approach. We're going to cut, you know, 1,000 people or whatever, and it doesn't really matter. We don't really care where these people are coming from. And then, you know, a few years down the line, the agencies will look around and go, gosh, we really needed Bob. I wish we had Bob around. And why did we let Bob take that buyout? And agencies very quickly came to regret letting a lot of really valuable people go. Now, it seems that agencies have kind of learned their lesson in this wave of buyouts we've seen over the last year or two, and they are being very surgical in how they do it. For example,
excuse me, I got a lot of questions about buyouts, but let us take a break here, Steve, and then we'll be right back talking about the theory behind the buyouts.
To help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
FLIR Systems, Flight Global, and Farnborough International Airshow are teaming to bring one of the world's largest flying displays live from England to your desktop. Enjoy flight line viewing of the most advanced aircraft in the world without leaving home. You will be captivated by truly unique ground-to-air and air-to-air live streaming using FLIR's Star Sapphire 380 HD infrared camera. To watch the most exciting show in the sky, July 9 through 13, visit FLIR.com/airshow.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Lars Okeson of Bernstein & Company, who will tell us about his unique experience as a CFO and how it helps him render financial advisory services to you, the consumer. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service firm located in Fairfax. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Reusing government personal property can save taxpayers millions of dollars. It's also a requirement that federal agencies acquire excess personal property first before purchasing new items. If you're wondering how to acquire excess personal property or transfer your agency's excess personal property, turn to GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. GSA offers programs and online tools such as GSA Access to help reuse and recycle items ranging from office equipment and furniture to computers, scientific devices, heavy machinery, airplanes, boats, and much more. Let GSA help you get the most out of the government's resources while saving money and protecting the environment. Remember, when you no longer need it, someone else does. For more information on reusing and recycling your excess personal property, visit GSA at gsa.gov/reusecmp. gsa.gov/reusecmp. That's gsa.gov/reusecmp.
Public, private, hybrid? The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email hpccoe@gtsi.com today.
Experiencing virtual reality usually requires bulky headgear or stationary immersive environments, but new contact lenses may soon allow visual enhancements on the go. you'd have to wear regular-sized glasses fitted with barely noticeable projectors on each arm that beam images onto the interior lens surface. Special contact lenses with two tiny filters would allow you to clearly see those images or, with the flip of a switch, turn them off. Randall Sprague, CTO of Innovega Inc., says it could be connected to your smartphone.
The wearable display allows you to have constant connection to the internet and only get the information when you need it.
Literally right before your eyes. The other filter allows or blocks light from the world around you, and Sprague says both filters can be open at once. So, for example,
you could have an application that does face recognition and then puts the name of that person on top of their head,
giving you perfect memory. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, this is Mike Causey. You're listening to Your Turn, and today my guest is Stephen Alosi. He is a reporter, senior writer with the Federal Times, and the lead piece this week was about the phased retirement that Congress enacted and the president has signed into law, but it's still brand new to most people. Steve made the point that it is at the government's option, so you can't march in and say you're going to do it. The boss has to be on board, and there are a number of caveats about it. Steve, we're talking about buyouts before the break, and you made a good point about how the psychology has changed behind what buyouts were. When they were launched during the Clinton era, the idea was to downsize government, and they went after certain people. They were looking really for a lot of blue-collar males, particularly those with veterans' preference, who would otherwise could not be riffed, and it would bump down the other people. They targeted what they called overhead jobs in HR and in a number of areas, and most of those were continued, but they were contracted out. And the new buyouts are much more surgical, and we see them even being limited to like certain field offices in the agriculture department.
That's right. You know, let's just take a look at GSA, for example. The other week, GSA announced a second round of buyouts that they offered to more than 1,000 employees. They expect about 200 of those are going to accept them. But the memo that came out was interesting. They listed, you know, about a half dozen or so specific offices, and down to the region, down to the location, down to the grade and job series of people who are eligible. So this is not a blunderbuss approach. They are saying, you know, if you're a non-supervisory GS 13 or 14 accountant in such and such a series in this division, you're eligible.
It's got everything but your name and Social Security number on it. You can identify yourself, can't you?
Exactly. They've been agencies the last year, two, three, maybe, have been looking long and hard at where they are top heavy and where they can stand to cut back on a few options, on a few employees, and they are really targeting these buyouts toward those areas.
And they think about 200 of 1,000 will take it.
Yeah, as far as GSA goes. You know, the Postal Service is also offering their own round of buyouts. They expect that as many as 7,400 postmasters and full-time mail handlers could take these the buyouts that could be anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000.
Well, you know, that brings up another issue that you've talked about and we've discussed before. The Postal Service looking at 7,400 on top of what they've already done. There were a number of buyouts last year by Air Force, and it's offering buyouts again this year. So while the retirement tsunami, as predicted, has not struck yet, you know, people aren't leaving in droves, many people are leaving because of the buyouts and because of the early retirement options. What's that doing to OPM's backlog? And if I'm somebody contemplating retirement, I better have that in mind, huh?
Yeah. Now, the pension backlog issue has been something that has plagued OPM for, I'm not kidding, decades, years and decades. The Office of Personnel Management earlier this year announced a strategic plan on how they're going to fix this problem once and for all, a collection of both hiring more people and training them up to do the pension processing, improvement in the processes by which agencies submit the information on retirees to them, things like that. And they have made some significant progress. When this year began, they had about 61,000 case backlog. The numbers that came out last week regarding June said that had dropped down to a little more than 48,000. So they are making progress. It's still nowhere near where it should be and where it was, you know, even 2 years ago. It's still far above that. But it's going in the right direction.
Well, that's a huge improvement when you figure, again, the buyouts are adding new people to the pile. And also, I saw that the error rate when agencies send over an application and a claim, and it is largely paper, it may be 5 pounds of paper, you know, with mm-hmm. your person's record, that there are some errors in it. And I think it was like an 18 or 19% error rate, which can delay everything.
Yeah. It should be noted that even though OPM is making progress and should be lauded for the progress that they are making, there are still a lot of people out there who are waiting several months, 4 or 5 months. Some people say they're still waiting more than a year for their pensions. So it's still not there. But progress is being made.
And the pension that they're getting, the payment that they're getting, it ranges, I've seen it from 40 to 80% of what they probably think they're due?
That's right. It does vary. OPM says that they are trying to increase the amount of the interim payment. For some people that has happened, but for others, they're still waiting for the bulk of their owed pension.
Yeah, and I guess until we go fully automated, and we're nowhere near that yet, there's always going to be a problem with this, particularly in a time of buyouts, or if the day when and if the tsunami hits as predicted, everybody out there is getting older, and eventually something like that will hit. So bottom line is you need to have a plan B whenever you're planning to retire, and that includes savings, enough money to get you by for at least six months?
That's the recommendation that most people say. Have a nest egg on hand that'll get you through 6 months of mortgage payments and bills and grocery bills and things like that. Have a cushion of 6 months because it might take that long to get your full pension.
Much easier said than done, but it's the kind of thing you need to do. And I know you've talked to people, and I've talked to people who said that they were counting on their annual leave, lump sum payment, and their TSP to give them a very good life in retirement, and they had to use up the lump sum annual leave and make extra withdrawals from the TSP simply because their full annuity check was delayed.
That's right. And dipping into your TSP earlier than you would plan to is not desirable at all because, you know, you could limit the amount that it could grow in the future if you start dipping into that kitty.
Yeah, so many financial planners say that if you can afford to do it, that you should only take the minimum distribution, which I think kicks in at age 70 and a half, and it's a relatively small amount, but a lot of people take more than that, and they're gambling that they're not going to live very long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else is good? See, what about this talk about increasing the retirement contribution for people by as much as 5%? Where is that now?
It's kind of stalled for the moment. That's something that has been popping up from time to time. It seems to be stalled at the moment. I haven't heard any rumblings about it, but I would not be surprised if it does come back up. Now, one thing that there was some news that broke last night regarding on the healthcare front. The White House has reportedly decided to allow federal firefighters who work seasonally, who work less than half a year, to buy into the FEHBP plan. This has been something that has been bugging firefighters for many years. There was a particular firefighter who is currently fighting in Colorado, the wildfire in Colorado. He started a petition online a couple of months back after his friend and fellow firefighter had a premature boy and had no health insurance. So this Mr. Lauer, the firefighter, his friend had to spend $70,000 on treatments for his son's because his son was born prematurely. So Mr. Lauer started a petition. It gathered steam online about a month ago. the National Federation of Federal Employees began talking to OPM about it. Apparently, President Obama, when he went to Colorado recently, the administration officials told the Denver Post that he was moved by the firefighters, the plight of the firefighters who have no health insurance. He supposedly came back to the White House and said, find a solution for these firefighters. And the White House told the Denver Post yesterday that OPM is going to come out with interim regulations by the end of the month that is going to allow them to buy insurance from FEHPP like most other federal employees.
Yeah, that presents a number of problems. I want to talk to you about it when we get back from break here, talking with Steve Losey about things federal.
Are you a loyal credit card user and your only reward is a high interest rate? Anyone can join State Department Federal Credit Union and take advantage of their Visa Platinum credit card. Just 6.99% APR and no foreign transaction or balance transfer fees. Visit sdfcu.org today. SDFCU is federally insured by NCUA.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by MetLife and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. It's one of the most common disabilities, yet most of us never even think about our hearing until we're having troubles. Now, we all lose something as we age, but
one thing you can do to help your hearing, and that is avoid damage due to noise exposure.
Dr. Colin Driscoll is an ear, nose, and throat specialist at Mayo Clinic. He says the two reasons that people lose hearing related to noise exposure is the intensity or volume of the sound and the duration of exposure.
You can have permanent hearing loss from one good night at a concert, and I certainly don't want that.
Lawnmowers, hair dryers, and power tools can be just as damaging. Dr. Driscoll's advice, when you know you're going to be around loud noises, wear earplugs. And if you're worried about your hearing, get a hearing test to find out where it's at and what your options are. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKsystems.com.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd.
I'm tired all the time. What's
going on? June 8th, I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Steve Losey from the Federal Times, and we were talking about buyouts and all manner of things, and the fact that the White House announced last night that it is going to find a way to let firefighters, these smoke jumpers who are out west now heroically battling some major forest fires, going to make them eligible for the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. See, that now these people are different. Part-timers, I think, can be covered because they are part-timers and it's worked. These people are seasonal employees, so this is a major sea change, I would think.
That's right. You know, they work, I believe it's if you work at least half a year, at least 6 months out of a year, you can sign on to FEHBP, but most federal employees who work less than half a year cannot. Now, the firefighters say, well, you know, it's true we only work, you know, less than half a year for our base hours, but when these guys are on, they're on. They work massive amounts of overtime. They say that some of them work nearly, you know, a full year's worth of time in less than 6 months because they work 6-7 days a week sometimes when the firefighters are really are really raging. It's something that's been really sticking in their minds for a while, it looks like it's finally Mr. Lauer's petition has finally yielded some progress. It got a lot of attention in the press. The AP picked up this story. I think we did one of the first stories on Federal Times, but then the AP picked it up. Brian Williams on NBC went out and did a piece there. It looks like the firefighters have won this battle.
Well, these are truly heroic people who literally risk their lives sometimes 20, 24 hours a day when they're in these situations. But it does, you have to think about the big picture, and this does open the door for other seasonal workers. What about Census Bureau employees who maybe only work one season every 4 years? And what about people who are more or less regulars around holidays with the Postal Service? You think they'll be knocking at the door?
It's possible. I would not be surprised if they did. We'll have to see if the White House would say, well, the firefighters were a special situation because they're in such danger. But, yeah, it could definitely open up the floodgates.
Yeah, well, I think your point, I hadn't thought of that, about the, quote, overtime that these firefighters put in. If you're dropped in the middle of a fire in Colorado, you don't take coffee breaks and things like that. So
Right. They
could easily work the equivalent of 2,080 hours in a season. But it is these things happen, and this is one reason that people are reluctant to change government benefits or widen the opening or whatnot, because it does attract other people who are coming in.
That's right.
Okay, you know, in our discussion before the show, you mentioned something about changes in student loans.
Yeah, the Office of Personnel Management also issued their latest report recently on student loan payments, and there has been in 2010, there was a noticeable increase in the amount of student loan repayments that the government made for its employees. They paid almost 85.7 million dollars in employee student loans in 2010. That's a 38% increase over the previous year, and the bulk of that increase came from DOD, which more than doubled its student loan repayment benefit in 2010. Defense has been having trouble getting employees to fill really crucial jobs like engineering and contracting due to this retirement wave that we were talking about earlier. So DOD increased its student loan program to try to bring in employees who younger employees who have those skills and are, you know, engineering, for example. You go to college for years to get an engineering degree. A lot of times, and it's so expensive these days, you come out, you have a staggering debt. Yeah, so this increase has reportedly helped the government attract those crucial employees.
Talking about student loans, before I left on vacation, the House was working on a plan that would require federal workers to pay more for their retirement, and this would make it unnecessary to raise the student loan rate for government student loans.
Yeah, that was included in the highway bill that passed the other week. There was some consideration about having federal employees cover the tab for keeping the student loan interest rate down nationwide. That did not make it into the final bill. It was stripped out somewhere along the line. That was included in the highway bill that also included the phase retirement.
You know, I know nobody can predict what Congress is going to do, particularly an election year Congress, and particularly one as divided as this is along partisan lines. But that said, do you think that maybe feds are maybe fireproof for the rest of the year?
No, I would definitely not. I think there's definitely a chance that federal employees could have some pain coming up.
What do you think is the most likely?
I think the most likely is a slight increase in a 1.2% increase in federal employees' contribution rates. That is what President Obama proposed. It's the lowest of any proposals out there. The Republicans have proposed much higher increases, anywhere from 1.5% to roughly 5 percentage points. So with Obama's 1.2% being the floor, I think that's at least what is going to
And that could be, as seen by the highway bill, that could be tacked onto anything, couldn't it?
That's right. The government, I mean, everybody knows the deficit problem. The government is under... Congress is under crushing pressure to not add to the deficit in these bills they pass. There's a lot of programs out there like unemployment, low student loan interest rates that are really necessary to keep large parts of the nation afloat in these really dire economic times. And there's a perception in Congress that feds have had it easy. I'm not saying that,
yes,
but that's the perception is, especially on the Republican side. And they're saying they see feds as a piggy bank to draw from to pay for some of these other spending problems.
Right. And looking at it, too, the people who have taken the big hits, in addition to the private sector, are public employees at the state, local, county government level. But the federal labor force has been relatively unscathed, except for the two-year pay freeze, which came from the White House.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's important to note that, you know, the decline in state and local jobs is one of the things that has continued to drag down the unemployment or drag up the unemployment rate in the country. Federal employees have seen a slight decline in their staffing. I believe last year was about 11,000 jobs were cut. But mostly the biggest pain federal employees have felt is the two-year pay freeze, at least 2 years. Who knows?
Good deal. All right, we'll feel our pain until next week. Thank you very much, Steve Losey, for being on hand. Hope you join us. Remember, this show is archived, so you can listen to it anytime. Pass it on to a friend. Thanks for being with us. Have a good week.